Hi, my name is Bruce Bolger, and I'm founder of the Enterprise Engagement Alliance, an organization that's dedicated to helping organizations enhance returns for shareholders by creating value for customers, employees, distribution and supply chain partners, communities, and the environment. And today we are lucky to have Joe Hinrichs, President and CEO of CSX Railroad. I'm an old railroad buff from the Ohio River, Joe, so I've seen a lot of your railroads over the years. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about what 21st century leadership looks like in practical terms, not virtual signaling or corporate social responsibility, but better management through people. And I think Joe caught us our attention through a series of articles in Harvard Business School, I believe, alumni, and then in the Wall Street Journal. So we're going to get into that in one more second. We always like to remind everybody of all the free services that our organization provides. So go to our website. We are stakeholder capitalists. We give a lot of way to help organizations achieve their goals. And we always like to thank the many customers that we have who make our business possible. So, Joe, I'm going to stop that and we're going to get to you now. And my first question is, what really got my attention reading about you was this focus on harmonizing the interests of your stakeholders. You got in there from a 29-year stint, I believe, at Ford Motor, working your way up. And so you seem to have a real focus on getting everybody's interests aligned. Could you talk about that, please?
Well, I think, thanks, Bruce, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. I think first and foremost, I had 31 years in the auto industry and now a little less than 18 months in the rail industry. And what I've found throughout my career is that the real magic happens when you can get people to work together. And it sounds so simple, but yet it's so complex because we're human beings. And so, and when you think broadly about all stakeholder groups, then you can make sure you're taking everybody's interest into account as you're making decisions, as you're prioritizing your resources and your time, but also in how you're running a business. And so I always like to start by just reminding people where the value is created in any enterprise. Who creates that value? And in the auto industry, I retired 4 years ago as president of Ford Motor Company. In the auto industry, that value is created. The designer or engineer who creates something, the manufacturing employee who builds something, and the sales employee who actually shakes hands and hands the keys over to the customer. Those are the value touch points. In the rail industry, we get paid for moving something from point A to point B, and the people that do that. And then if you remind yourself that the people that do that work that you get credit, that the value is created for your enterprise, it's easy to have the perspective of we should be serving them. And then how do we serve all stakeholders to make that happen? And I think the best enterprises keep all stakeholders in mind as they're making decisions, as they're prioritizing their strategy. Obviously, you don't stay a public company CEO very long if your investors, don't feel like they're getting their rewards, the proper rewards for your work. But my belief is if you have all the especially your employees, but all the stakeholders, employees, your customers, suppliers, regulators, other folks like that, part of the team, you're going to end up taking care of your shareholders.
Well, and it's interesting looking at your stock performance. I haven't checked in the last couple of days, but since you joined, the stock is up pretty handily, but your profits aren't and sales aren't. You got hit by some one-off. So what's interesting is it seems that the shareholders are aligned with your vision, even if you haven't produced those short-term results. But that's really another subject. But let me ask you this: is it possible, do you think, for an organization to optimize returns for shareholders over the long term unless you harmonize the interests of your customers, your employees? And a lot of what I've written about you, you're getting out, you're talking to employees. I follow you on social media. You're highlighting employees, new locomotives, engineers. That isn't just kind of an ad hoc thing. This seems to be your strategy.
No, well, it comes back to where is the value created? It's the employees that move the goods. They're the employees that do the work. They're out in the field in the railroad industry. They're the engineers, the conductors, the carmen, people working in our shops. And you got to be out there. I show up randomly at locations, try to do it every week. Just talk to employees and just get a feel for how's it going. Tell me how's it going. What can we do to help? And how's business? How's your teamwork? How's your manager? How's the environment you're in? How safe is it? What can we do better? And to answer your higher level question, I don't think you can ultimately create value, significant value for your shareholders without having, especially your employees and your customers, being part of the prioritization of the business. We're a service business. You know, we move things for people from point A to point B. And service businesses, the best service businesses that we've studied over decades, start with the culture of their employees and the culture of serving others and how they work together. So if we don't focus on our employees, we don't create the culture of service, the culture of working together, we're not going to satisfy our customers. And then if you don't satisfy your customers and delight your customers, ultimately they have choices and they'll choose to either pay less or they'll choose to go somewhere else, both of which can be problematic. So yes, I believe fundamentally that especially if you take care of your employees and your customers, shareholders will ultimately be rewarded.
Now, you know, it's really interesting. As you know, you're too busy running a railroad perhaps to waste much time on it, but there's been a real debate against this concept of shareholder capitalism versus stakeholder capitalism. And frankly, we as an organization define stakeholder capitalism more like total quality management for people. And we were stunned when it became politicized. But the reason I ask you this is that structurally, from an organizational standpoint, it seems to me that where everything starts is not the stakeholders or the shareholders, it's your reason for being. It's what you said before and what you say and everything I've read about you. Hey, our customers are running their business based on their product, the shipments getting there on this time. That's our purpose. So in a way, aren't we losing something when if we don't have, and I don't mean a purpose with a sign on the wall and all of that nonsense. Right. I mean, every day when I'm making a decision, whether I'm an engineer, whether I'm an administrator, and I have to make a decision, what is our purpose, goals, objectives, and values? How important is that? Is that just talk or is that foundational?
I think it's foundational and it's critical and it's hard. And that's why people don't talk about it. And that's why you don't see it that often. It's easy. You know, oftentimes we teach people to manage. We teach people to skills to management skills, which are really important. You know, how to run a business, how to run a budget, how to run a project, how to run a process or a meeting. But we don't teach a lot of leadership skills. And leadership is about exactly what you're talking about. It's communication, engagement, motivation, inspiration, vision, a purpose. But that's what people want to know. Why am I here? What am I doing? You know, what are we doing? What is our purpose? And it's easy to get people excited about serving the purpose if they understand it and they buy into it. It's harder for people to get inspired by, I got to cut 5% from my budget this year, or I got to, you know, take 10 seconds off of this, or I need to, you know, meet this deadline. All important steps to delivering something. But from our perspective, we have 23,000 employees. And if we can get 23,000 employees working together to safely and efficiently serve our customers in ways they've never seen before, we believe we'll win. It's hard to get 23,000 people on the same page every day. And that's why it takes so much effort, why you got to be out in the field, why you got to be talking to people through social media, through meetings, town halls, videos, everything to connect with people, to build a relationship, to help make that happen. There's no question that, you know, people want to know that they're doing something that's meaningful. They're doing meaningful work and they're contributing in a positive way to that. And then we get them engaged in that to make them feel special about how they do that.
You know, it's interesting, by the way, you talked about your managing by walking around just to make you feel better. I was just talking with a gentleman, a very successful man the other day, who told me his life was changed on his first day, in his first job, a low-level job at Costco. And the founder of Costco, I forget his name, was doing one of those walk arounds. And he walked up to him and he said, the first thing he said after greeting him, the founder of Costco, where do you see yourself at Costco in 10 years? And he didn't even know, he said at the time, how significant that was. He only learned later on how significant that was. So let's talk about implementation, because it is hard to get 23,000 people. And not to mention in a culture that has often had a divisive relationship between the CEO and management and the workers. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So in a sprawling railroad, with all of that, what are kind of some of the fundamental principles as a CEO you use to align and harmonize interests? You have all these tools. You have communications, you have recognition platforms, I would imagine, you have training, and all of these things often to me work aren't aligned. How do you get that aligned to support purpose, objectives, goals?
Yes, great question. We're in 26 states plus Ontario and Quebec, 23,000 people. So you can do the math, we're spread out. So it's hard. It starts with what we try to do is communicate through a guiding principle called One CSX and the values and behaviors and principles that stand behind that. And essentially, we want all of our employees to feel valued, appreciated, respected, included, and listened to. We say it over and over again, valued, appreciated, respected, included, and listened to. And if we can get, so that we want that to be in the thought process of all of our leadership team, of all of our employees, we should treat each other with respect. We should appreciate each other. We should value each other. We should include each other. We should listen to each other. And we repeat that over and over again. And One CSX is a feeling, it's a culture, it's a principle around how we work together. And that's how we communicate. That's how we remind people. That's how we take pride in what we do. You know, my cup has One CSX on it, you know, that I'm drinking out of. It was a reminder that we're one team. And our purpose is to serve customers. And we do it together safely and efficiently. We can make a profit. We can do that. We can reinvest in the business and we can share those rewards with our employees. So it's all about communication and connecting with people. I often say that if you want people to change or if you want an organization to change, they have to trust in the change agent. They have to trust in the message, trust in the purpose. There's no trust without a relationship. You don't trust somebody you don't know. You don't trust somebody you've never met. So you have to build a relationship. That means you have to invest. There's no relationship without interaction, without communication, without some type of connection. So you have to invest time and energy into that interaction, that communication, that connection to build a relationship, which it goes both ways because you're listening and also communicating to build a foundation of trust. Once you have a foundation of a trust in an organization, you can change. You can make things happen. An organization can believe in the purpose and make it happen. So that's why we spend so much time out in the field. I'm going to have time doing town halls, videos, communications on social media, celebrating our employees. And what we're trying to do is reinforce the behaviors because you get the behaviors you teach or you tolerate. So at first, as leaders, we can't tolerate the wrong behaviors because that's on us. That creates a culture. But importantly, we have to teach. What are the right behaviors? What are we looking for? And all those messages, all those LinkedIn posts, all those social media connections, all the town hall engagements, all the communications are about teaching and the expectations for leadership behaviors and behaviors of our team to build that foundation of trust to be able to change.
So it seems to me there are three fundamental problems in organizations, or actually four, that stop this type of strategy from happening. One of them you've already addressed, the CEO. If the CEO doesn't buy in, forget it. All right. And I would say 20% of CEOs out there have your frame of mind of not just believing this, but actually believing, but actually putting it into a system. And I won't put you on the spot. I'll just continue. But in terms of implementation, the next problem I see is frontline managers, that they are the ones that touch our employees day in and day out. And they often get promoted. And leadership is not just about warm and fuzzies, right? So how do you address the 23,000 employees? You probably have about 2,300 people who can affect the lives of customers and employees very directly. What do you do about that to instill, and you know one meeting is not going to do it, to instill these values into your frontline managers?
Well, first and foremost, we survey our employees every year, anonymous surveys. And that's really important. We did it twice last year. We're in one right now. It's really important to get feedback from your employees. And also, because we know kind of, you know, either logistically, geographically where they are or what department they are, we can get a sense for, do we have issues in a certain group or a certain location? And that holds management accountable, but also it gives us a mechanism for employees to give us feedback, and it's anonymous. And last year, twice we did surveys. The first time we got 3,600 written comments. I read them all. The second time we got 3,200 written comments. I read them all. Some of them were, you know, chapters in a book. But it's important that people know you're listening, and they know you're responding, and you care. And so that, you're right. The CEO is most critical, because if the CEO doesn't promote it, doesn't push it, doesn't drive it, the rest of the organization isn't gonna follow, because they just how organizations work. But those managers in the field, I say in the field, those are our people that are just distributed throughout the network. They're the most critical because to the bulk of almost all of our employees, that is management. You know, they don't see me, you know, very, very, on occasion. And so we have to get the behaviors back to teaching and tolerating. So we look for evidence, both in what we're teaching, but also in what we're getting in surveys and other mechanisms of how are they doing. And we're teaching and setting expectations. And frankly, sometimes people have to go if they're not willing to change or not willing to. But that also sends a message about what our priorities are, sends a message about what we're going to tolerate, sends a message about what we care about. And we've had probably 7 or 8 managers leave in the last year or so, but it's sent a very strong message that, you know, we're looking for these kinds of behaviors, these kinds of leaders. But it goes back to this one CSX message that, you'll enjoy work more. We'll be more efficient. We'll be safer. It'll be a better environment if we create this environment that we're talking about. Can people buy into that? When you get them to buy into it, they can help make it happen. And that's what we spend so much time talking about. There's no question. You know, my experience that you referenced as a first line supervisor in the auto industry, I supervised 34 UAW employees right out of college. And it was such an eye-opening experience. And then all the things I was taught were wrong about the people who were teaching me. And I'm like, it's not working. There's all this angst. There's all this animosity. There's all this, fighting. I'm like, this isn't working. There's got to be a better way. And then the Japanese came to America and taught us a different way of approaching manufacturing, both from a process standpoint, but also from a culture standpoint. And yeah, the American manufacturing sector is still learning, but it's learned a lot. I got to grow up in that world and learn about it. And the same thing applies here. If people feel like they're truly valued and appreciated and respected and listened to, they can buy into what your purpose is and they can help make it happen. And the power comes from the people making it happen.
Well, and it's interesting you mentioned, because I liken stakeholder capitalism to TQM, which you told a quality management. And you, right. As you well know, the Japanese actually got it from Deming.
Yes. Who I spent some time with personally, actually. I got to spend a couple of days with him, following around, shadowing him and talking to him and picking his brain in the early 90s, not too long before he passed away. And I learned a lot from that perspective. And don't blame the people, blame the process. You know, focus on what's your consciousness of purpose. You know, all these things that he taught us that are very relevant even today, and they will be 20 years, 100 years from now.
And Joe, but wouldn't you argue that we really, even today, you know, the Japanese automakers occupy the top 10 list of the highest quality cars, according to Consumer Reports. Not one American car maker is on it. And I would argue that it's because we have not mastered the people part of TQM. We didn't realize that TQM is also involves your employees and voice and autonomy. And again, I know you're not going to take on your good friends in the automotive industry, but it strikes me that we have not really adopted TQM as well as the Japanese. And they have other problems, as you know. I wouldn't trade our economy for any other. So moving on, getting into sort of the practical things, silos. I find that number two biggest challenge beside frontline managers is aligning all the different things we do to engage people. And I find the breakdowns in almost every organization, right? In fact, downright competition between sales and marketing. HR is disliked in many, many organizations by everybody else, right? And then we do incentive programs or recognition programs that are completely cut off from the training programs. So they just become nice to haves. First off, do you think in all your years that silos are a big challenge in many organizations? And if so, how do we break them down?
I think it's actually one of the biggest challenges, and in the auto industry especially, one of the most successful CEOs that I saw in the auto industry, I worked for him for 7 years, was Alan Mulally. When Alan came in to Ford in 2006 from Boeing, that was what he saw. He said, we have to create this culture called One Ford, believe it or not. And it was about people working together as one team. He said, one team, one plan, one goal. And we've tried to emulate some of that at CSX as part of One CSX. In order to break down silos, the incentives have got to be aligned so they're corporate-wide, they're company-wide, not individually specific, because people will suboptimize for their own self-interest. So you got to have goals that are aligned across the enterprise, and it got to be enterprise goals. In my opinion, that's the best way to first one. But the one thing that also I learned was process governance of how you run a business can help break down silos. You have to have the team getting together with regularity, talking about the corporate objectives, the corporate goals, how we're doing, trending, and talk about it as a team and make sure the team's accountable for all those results, not just marketing and sales or operations or human resources or legal or whatever it is. And so we use governance. So we have a weekly meeting where our entire team gets together and we use data and we talk about how we're doing. And yeah, the ownership is in different groups, but it's a team effort. And we talk about it as a team. And what can we do to help each other? What can we do to help make progress happen? And so how you govern, how you choose to lead, and how you bring people together is a big part of breaking down silos, the objectives and the governance process around how you run the business. And if you can do that right, you can help break down those. And then it comes down to leadership behaviors. Are you parochial? Are you enterprise? Do you care about everybody or do you care about yourself? And then you've got to weed out the people that can't fit into that, or you have to teach the behaviors and then set expectations around that to make that happen. I've found that most organizations are dysfunctional at this level because of either personalities or because of silo thinking and objective setting, and because enterprises don't run the business with a governance structure that brings people together and holds people accountable for the team's results as opposed to individual results.
And for terminology, folks, those in our community would call governance in this sense a business operating system is really what I think you're saying.
Exactly. No question about it.
Critical. It's the purpose and a business. And I think the reason a lot of companies get into the state you are is that they don't have a clear purpose. So it becomes infighting and struggling for resources and whatnot. And that's where the CEO comes in. So then the last element you referred to is impact measurement. What I also find in people management, Joe, if I have seen more money wasted in my lifetime, oh my gosh, I wish I could share with you. At one trade show alone, I have seen probably $300 million just wasted, okay? Wow. Just vanity, you know, huge exposition. Oh, we'll bring in a locomotive here to this trade show. Well, what's the ROI on that? You know, oh yeah, it's great to have the CXOs and great to have the CEO's picture. Or for instance, you see a lot of an out-of-home advertising right before the Emmy Awards or something. $1 million is spent to put the actress's picture up there. What? So my question to you, how good are we really? We're pretty damn good. Like, we're not going to have time to talk about it. It's kind of, arcane for our audience. You know, the systems of managing rail efficiency and whatnot that have been a big issue in your field. And your way of dealing with that involving employees and customers. But let me ask you this. How good are we at managing and measuring people impact versus manufacturing? Are we kind of not so good at that? Or could we do better?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of this has to do with, you know, again, how we're measured and how we're rewarded. For good or bad, we have a quarterly mindset, you know, in the American economy, especially with Wall Street. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're responsible to use investors' capital to return to the shareholders. And so we lose sight of return on invested capital, return on net assets, and we stand focused on quarterly profits and especially year over year performance. And so I can tell you on reflection of my, 30 years in the auto industry, it's an industry that destroyed a lot of capital. It didn't return on a lot of capital. And I regret that. And I think about all the time, what could be done differently, better? What could we learn? And the rail industry went through its transformation, now has a much better return mechanism and process, but over almost 200 years has its many decades where it didn't. And so we got to get back to being accountable for returning on the investments that we make. And to your point, and everything should have an ROI. Most everything should have an ROI, even the stuff that we don't really can't measure, like culture. You invest in people, you invest in the culture because you believe it'll create a better environment to attract and retain people and have more productive people and have people stay with you and deliver better results. That is an ROI. It's just hard to calculate based on that. But you have to believe in some of these things. But to your point, you know, we're stewards of shareholders' capital and we have to be responsible for it. People say like, oh, what would you do with your own money? Well, you should be thinking like that because always should be thinking like that because ultimately you're responsible for someone else's share, their capital. And I think we become too focused on short term. We become too focused on year over year as opposed to what's the return. And we frankly excuse a lot of things away, as specials or something like that. And we have to get back to fundamentally, is the business doing, serving its purpose? In this case, either providing a product or a service to a customer and getting a return that is beyond the cost of capital to create value for shareholders. And then how do we do that together as a team? And how do we get inspired to do that even better and better and better? And I think, you know, we need a wake-up call in some respects of we can't just keep destroying use of capital. If we want our economy to grow, our standard of livings to improve, we have to make productivity and positive returns on capital that help make that happen.
And we don't have time to cover everything I would love to cover with you, because I did want to get into your leadership approach and how we can reset labor management relations. But, you know, we don't have time, because I really want to ask you this last question. Isn't there really a time for a new paradigm of leadership? We had the Jack Welch, and he returned for shareholders. He did, until he didn't. Let's not forget that. I think he destroyed a lot of capital. I think in this funny way, hasn't shareholder capitalism, I'm a huge capitalist, have a lot of money in the market, or a lot of our money in the market and believe in it, but it hasn't been efficient. It isn't efficient. It's wasteful. Every time I have a bad customer service call, the reason we want to do this call with you, Joe, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but we think you are a new paradigm of leadership. Doesn't mean you're going to succeed. A lot of things could happen. You could have, God help us, a terrible accident. But we know that you are a stakeholder-oriented. Is there a new paradigm? I know you're not trying to be. But by the way, I want to tell you something here. Somebody's wrote here, such a contrast between the short-term profit orientation of companies like Boeing versus the one CSX team, a long-term stakeholder well-being approach under Joe's leadership. Any chance Joe will run for president? Our country needs more leaders like Joe Hinrichs. I did not plant that. That's in our chat. I know you're not holding yourself up to that. You're going to get off the phone and start running your railroad again. But do we need a new paradigm, or is America ready for a new paradigm of leadership?
I think, well, I certainly, on the political side, we definitely need new leadership. And, you know, we need people who want to find solutions, not, you know, defend causes or defend positions. But you go back to leadership in general, we got to get back to remembering that leadership is about service. It's about serving other people. It's not about ourselves. It's not about a title or a position. And if we can get leaders at all levels of government, of business, of society, to come in every day with the intention of helping other people succeed, of serving other people, we can create a lot of good in this world. And I think over time, people have lost that perspective, whether it's pursuit of power or money or ego or just all the other things that get in our way. We have to keep reminding ourselves that a couple of things that I think are truisms that I believe. I believe positive energy is infectious. I believe that leadership is about serving other people. So if we can think about how to serve other people and create an environment where other people can be successful, then we'll be successful as leaders. And I believe you get the behaviors your teacher tolerate, and you can't tolerate the wrong behaviors because they get worse over time. And you need to teach. And teaching is a skill. It's an art and a science, but it's important. We'll never stop learning, but we can teach other people. So, you know, those are some of my thoughts. But I think at the end of the day, we do need to step back and think about, you know, what are we creating, you know, for my children, for their children, for next generations? What are we creating in this society? You know, we have all these new technologies, whether it's social media or AI or things. And what is our purpose here? What are we trying to achieve? And if we're trying to serve other people and make life better for everyone, we come in with a leadership mindset like that. I think that's where we got to start, is that we're here to serve other people, not to serve ourselves.
Well, Joe, I think you're doing it every day. And I think it's really the guiding principle is purpose leadership, focusing on our organization's purpose, not a purpose. I don't think there's any corporate responsibility other than that to our organization and our communities. Joe, thank you so much. I'm going to ask you to stand by for one little quick housekeeping moment. Folks, this was a great show. We're going to have it up live on YouTube probably by tomorrow. And I know a lot of you will enjoy it. Thank you, those of you who attended.
Thank you, Bruce.